All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
If the season ended today, the Vancouver Canucks would be the President's Trophy winners. Jonathan Lekaramaki's in town. Good vibes only on today's episode, folks. Welcome back to another episode of Canucks Conversation. My name is Dave Guadrelli. That is Harmon Dial. Our technical producer, the man at the controls, is Grady Sass. And as always, Canucks Conversation is brought to you by the 2023 Toyota BZ4X. The BZ4X is Toyota's brand new all-electric SUV that is designed to go the distance for you and your family. The BZ4X is packed with Toyota's coolest tech, but it still has that trusty SUV feel you know and love. And even though it's electric, it's capable of effortlessly conquering any terrain. Whether it's rain, snow, mud, or your friend's questionable post-game recaps, the BZ4X will get you through it all. The BZ4X is also great when you're on a highway and you're riding smooth and you're going downhill. Well, I guess that's not the best analogy, but it feels like everything's going right for the Vancouver Canucks right now, Harmon. Three straight wins after their win on Saturday night against the Calgary Flames. That one by a final score of 4-2. Good vibes today, Harm. Good vibes.
Yeah, well, how nice is it that the Canucks are in a situation where in years past, the news of Lekaramaki coming to town would be literally the only source of hope and optimism, right? You'd be a pumped about that. You'd be hoping that the young guys continue progressing. And beyond that, you'd literally just be rooting for the team to lose in anticipation of the draft lottery. Whereas now Lekaramaki is in town and it's just another positive storyline. It's not even, it's something people are talking about. But when you run into Canucks fans in person, it's not as if they're, especially the casual ones, it's not as if that's capturing their attention. Everybody's just focused on this stretch drive, getting amped up for the playoffs. And I mean, the game on Saturday against Calgary was just another example of kind of taking care of business at home. I was going to say top line, but I still have to get used to technically considering the JT Miller line, the top line. The Pedersen line was terrific. And I mean, to see the continued development for Nils Höglander, it's amazing seeing how far he's come compared to last year when he was down in Abbotsford.
Another strong performance from that Pedersen line since Connor Garland and Nils Höglander have been put on that line. Elias Pedersen looks better, and of course, that line as a whole looks better. I would say, again, Connor Garland had a really, really nice stretch, obviously, on the third line, but it's hard to say that this isn't the best that all three of those guys as individuals has looked this season. Obviously, you can make a case for Garland, but I'd say for Pedersen, this is the best combination of wingers in terms of performance that he's had all season. And like you said, Nils Höglander with 2 goals in that game. Again, all at even strength, 22 goals, all at even strength. He's got more even strength goals than some of the best players in the league, Harmon.
Yeah, you also mentioned Garland and Pettersson establishing chemistry, whereas they hadn't in the past, right? I'd mentioned the underlying numbers when they were initially put together as a line, but they finally seemed to click, seemed to read off of each other. And I think the first opening goal was a perfect example of that, because the whole night they were creating rush chances, but especially on that first rush, it's Garland's move to cut across into the middle, make that east-west move that starts to create some chaos on that play, where he's able to wait to make sure that Pettersson can catch up in the play, make sure that the passing lane is available. And then when he gets it across, then you have Oliver Shillington in no man's land, because there's so many developing options. He's preoccupied with Höglander making the center lane drive. He's worried about Garland cutting into the slot, and what if he becomes a shooting threat? Then there's Pettersson also as a threat himself on the right side. That's how you break defenses down, is when there are so many options and you're forcing defenders in real time to make decisions. And that's also how Backlund on that play sort of got crossed up and in the end wasn't able to take away that pass from Pettersson to Höglander. And again, it's that chemistry, it's reading off each other. I also want to give a shout out on that first goal to Tyler Myers and Carson Soucy. And I think it's the perfect example of why the team's been able to take a step this season, is the initial defensive zone retrieval on that rush. Myers wins a 50-50 battle, makes a short little bank pass to Soucy, and then it's Soucy head up, patient, poised bank pass to make sure that Garland was able to initially enter the offensive zone with control. That matters, because in years past, whether you want to put it on blue line construction, whether you want to point to the coaching staff and it not being at the level that it is today, I don't think Garland's in a situation where they're entering the offensive zone with possession of the puck in the first place. That's such a calm, poised play sequence by Myers and Soucy there that, that again, in years past, how many issues has this team had breaking the puck out? And when we talk about the coaching staff and their impact on this defense core, I think the biggest impact has been on these breakouts, improving Carson Soucy's passing, which wasn't his biggest strength in Seattle. We've seen the impact with Noel Juulsen as well. So I love that on that goal as well.
Carson Soucy, we've given him his flowers all season long. And it's worth mentioning that when they signed this player, Harm, the conversations we were having were, okay, he's a third pairing defenseman that the team clearly believes has top four upside. And I think it's hard to dispute that they were right in their assumption that he had that top four upside, because he's played like a top four defenseman this season. Okay. In the preview of tonight's game against the LA Kings, we're going to get to some new defense pairings potentially, because at practice on Sunday, we saw some new ones. Well, again, we'll get to that later. I still want to talk about this game, Harm. One aspect of the game against Calgary Flames I think that needs to be spoken about is Casey DeSmith. He's been great since Thatcher Demko went down, but in that game on Saturday night, there were some chances, like some five alarm chances for the Flames early on, and I think DeSmith holding down the fort early kind of let the Canucks get their feet under them. And not that they started sluggish per se, but there were some more high danger chances than I think they would have liked to be giving up early on in the game, and DeSmith held down the fort. He did his part in that game, and I think it really opened the door for them to come back in the first period, especially. I noticed that, but even later in the game, I noticed it as well. And obviously there was some puck luck. The power play comes through. I think it was 2-1. Yeah, it was 2-1. And then Calgary had a shot that went off the post, and then that came right after the Canucks failed to convert on a power play opportunity. And then moments later, JT Miller draws the penalty from Oliver Shillington, ices the game on the power play. And despite not having the strongest of games, gets the JT Miller chant. We have the quote here, courtesy of our pal Patrick Johnson, of what Miller said after the game. He said, "I heard it today," and that's obviously alluding to the fact that this isn't the first time that the Canucks fans have chanted JT Miller's name, but every time he's asked about it, he says, "Oh, I didn't even hear it, to be honest with you. I didn't even notice this. I didn't even notice that." That's kind of JT Miller's signature move, is to go to the, I didn't hear about it, so obviously you can't ask me about it anymore and I can't talk about it. So he did admit that he did hear the chant on Saturday night, and he said, "But honestly, I don't know why the hell they chanted my name. I was maybe the worst effing player in the game." I agree with him to some extent. He wasn't the worst player, but it wasn't his best night. And it's funny because when a player impacts a game as heavily as Miller did on Saturday night, you kind of have to be a little bit more checked in your criticism, because you can't come out and say something like, oh, I thought Miller was the worst player in the game. Like, Miller said that about himself, which is one thing, but you can't come out and say Miller was the worst player in the game when he draws the penalty and then promptly scores the power play goal that effectively ices this game and ends a game that was a little bit closer than I think the Canucks would have liked. You can't say he was the worst player, but it wasn't his best performance to that point. But taking over the game like that, even when it's not your best night, that's what good players do.
Yeah, I think it speaks to a few things. Like you said, top players, even when they're having an off night, they still find a way to land on the score sheet. It's the old McDavid. Oh, you barely notice him, and somehow he walks away from the game with like a goal and an assist. So that matters for starters, where if you don't have your even strength game, maybe you can impact the game on the power play. I mean, even Nathan MacKinnon in that game, the Avalanche came back and he wasn't really going at his best at 5-on-5, but was still a game changer on the man advantage, helped spark that that comeback. So there's that angle. Also, I think it's worth mentioning that the Pettersson line obviously scored on their first shift. I think the Miller line also deserves credit, and that's obviously not just on JT. Suter and Brock also deserve credit because they were buzzing right away. That first shift that the Canucks had, they spent it in the offensive zone. They were playing fast. They were cycling the puck. They were already starting to mount some pressure, which immediately, I think, parlayed into the Canucks also playing fast and generating some looks when that Pettersson line stepped on the ice. But yeah, I also think it's a window into the way Miller evaluates his own game. What I mean by that is he's always been the type of player that when you have conversations with him in the past, he doesn't care a lot about how many points he got in a specific night or over a specific stretch when he's evaluating his own game. Of course he likes points. What player doesn't like points, but there are nights where he'll put up points and he'll be saying, I didn't play that well defensively, or wasn't happy with my overall game. And then there will be other stretches where the production isn't there, but he's insisting that, that he's actually playing well and that he's just not getting bounces. And in most of those cases, he's actually right. So that, I think, is fascinating that you have a player that is so process over results driven. You also get that sense from him when he's talking about the power play a lot of times. Sometimes they'll be struggling, and look, if they're genuinely struggling to create chances, he'll be the first one to say, we're not creating chances. But there will be other times when, let's say, the power play is threatening, not quite converting, and he'll say, look, I actually think we're playing well, we're just not getting bounces. And I think that's a pretty smart way of evaluating his own game and the team as a whole.
I don't know if he's talked about this in the past, but I think Miller would be a good coach. Like,
oh,
I think
yeah,
he'd be a really, really, really solid coach. Like, I'd almost think of him kind of like a Rick Tocchet, right? Like, I think he'd be a similar coach to Rick Tocchet. But anyways, don't want to get too off track, and we'll ask Miller about it.
He's such a tactics nerd. And yeah, how many times do you see him on the ice, off a faceoff, telling line mates where to go or what he's going to be doing or how he wants off a defensive zone draw to have players in certain situations to orchestrate a breakout, how much communication there is with Miller and talking on the bench, drawing plays up. He's in the conversations you have with him tactically about the power play or what did you see on this play? Why were you able to break them down? The level of detail that he's able to provide on what he saw in the opposition's coverage, or what he was thinking in terms of, oh, in this spot, I was initially thinking of rolling and switching spots with Brock there, but he didn't pick up on that. And then I did this instead. Like, he is so smart in that way. And yeah, no doubt about it, he'd make a terrific coach down the line if that's what he wants to do.
I hope it is what he wants to do. I'd love to see it. I would absolutely love to see it. Okay. On the Flames game, I don't know. Yeah, we can use this to kind of transition a bit. Is there anything else you want to say? Because I'm going to close out this game by talking about the power play a little bit more.
I just want to say, how funny was it that Phil Peronic threw some huge checks? Like, that's probably the most physical I've seen him play. Annihilated Connor Zary on that one play after, I think it was Pospisil took a run at Hughes. And honestly, I think from a competitiveness standpoint, and this isn't necessarily, oh, I want to see more open ice hits from Filip Hronek, but if he can be a little bit more assertive, even down low defensively, to try, like when he's trying to win battles, if you can just sort of ignite a higher level of consistent competitiveness, I think that's something that could take his defensive game to the next level. Because I remember watching him during stretches when the Canucks initially traded for Hronek, and when he's playing his best defense, he's really engaged. He's really aggressive. And I think, again, it's not about necessarily throwing huge open ice checks, but I do think there's a higher level of consistent competitiveness away from the puck that he can tap into that would help him improve some of his defensive play.
Okay, I have a couple things, and again, of course, we're going to keep talking Hronek down the stretch of the season, but I have a couple things that I wanted to mention. The first one, I mentioned off the top, if the season ended today, Canucks win the President's Trophy, which obviously means that they are in line to win the Pacific Division. Some rough games over the weekend as the Oilers go winless in Ontario, blowing a lead against the Senators and losing to the Toronto Maple Leafs as well. Knock on wood, of course, because we know how insufferable the Oilers fans would be, but it looks like the Canucks are going to control their own destiny when it comes to winning the Pacific Division here. So, Harm, interesting note, if they win the Pacific Division, if it's the first time they've ever won the Pacific Division, because before it was the Northwest Division, it was the Smythe Division. They've never won a Pacific Division title. And again, if you ask me, after tonight's game, which with a couple other things, like if Vegas loses, there's two scenarios. But the point is the Canucks can clinch a playoff spot tonight. It'd be their first time clinching a playoff spot in season since 2015, because obviously last time they clinched it with a play-in round. And, you know, the COVID stuff, we're not even going to talk about that. But it all just got me thinking about how there's nobody on this team that's played playoff hockey in front of the crowd at Rogers Arena. Like, Brock Besser is someone that J-Pat talked about for his Patterson's Point column over at CanucksArmy.com. And Brock Besser is very excited about it. And that team is very excited. And this is their first chance to see it. And man, I think it's going to be so much fun to watch playoff hockey back at Rogers Arena. And I'm really excited for that.
Yeah, and you're going to have to be careful. And I'm sure they're going to be on top of this. But you can't be starstruck by the moment, because a series can flip on you so, so quickly. And this is what I expect from them, especially with the presence of somebody like a JT Miller in the room. I think they're going to have some swagger about, absolutely, we deserve to be in this situation. And we're not just in the playoffs to be here and have a good time and say we made the playoffs, but to actually do some damage, to actually make some noise. And again, different circumstances, but I do remember covering that 2019-20 season. And when the Canucks were going into, this is pretty much right before COVID hit, and there was this idea of, okay, they acquired Toffoli, and this is a year we're going to make the playoffs and finally take that step. There was a level of swagger in that locker room where you could tell that they weren't just going to be content with, oh, okay, we made the playoffs. There was genuine belief that, okay, if we get hot, we know what we're capable of. Again, a lot of it was driven by Miller, and I think that's an underrated component of the trade too, is not just what he's done on the ice, but what he's done in that locker room of, hey, that's a quiet group. And even when he joined that core, I mean, Hughes and Pettersson were young and obviously introverted, but you also even think about some of the veterans on that team, like Edler and Tanev, also more reserved guys. JT's been someone that's really brought swagger and belief, confidence, some moxie to that group. I expect that to also translate into when the Canucks make their return to the playoffs. Now,
speaking of parlay, Shohei Ohtani speaking at 2:45 p.m. we'll talk about it. Anyone else? I'm sure it'll get brought up, but no, busy show. But I had to take the opportunity to make a joke there. Okay, on the power play, that's the last thing I wanted to talk about before we kind of transition, and it does transition a little bit. Nils Höglander scores two goals in that game against the Calgary Flames. All of these, again, at even strength. No surprise, we know they're all going to be coming at even strength for Nils Höglander. This is a list of who he has more 5-on-5 goals than this season. Connor McDavid, William Nylander, Leon Draisaitl, Kyle Connor, Nikita Kucherov, Sidney Crosby, Kirill Kaprizov, Jason Robertson, Connor Bedard, Jake Guentzel, and Brady Tkachuk. That was from Canucks Place on Twitter. He posted that, and It was an interesting stat to read. And Harm, it got me thinking about the power play a little bit, because right now Pia Suter is in the bumper spot there. And I feel like at this point, we know that they need a left-handed shot in the net front position. Like, they need a left-handed shot in that spot for the power play to work. Full stop, right? We know it needs to be a left shot for JT Miller to be effective on the half wall, and that's what we've seen lately. And look, no knocks against Pia Suter. I think he's actually been really good and maybe a tad underrated at 5-on-5 with how well he's played this season, but not sure I'd have him in the power play anymore. Like, again, I know it's working right now, like the power play is, but it just feels like Nils Höglander is knocking down the door. And I know we're less than a month away from playoff games, but I think long-term success for this power play and heading into the playoffs, I feel like your only other left shot option is Nils Höglander. I think sooner or later, you're going to have to do it. And I think they should do it sooner rather than later. I think Nils Höglander should be on that power play, should be on power play one, right in that spot where Pia Suter is. I think he should be there today.
Yeah, I'm torn on that. I do agree that I don't think Suter is the answer there. In the medium term, there was a play where Miller faked a shot, slid it into the middle for a high danger chance, and Suter shot it straight into Markstrom's crest. Where you're like, okay, if you're a bumper shooter there, you've got to be consistent about hitting corners, whether it's short side, far side. You can't hit. Like, a goalie's, because you're in the middle of the ice in that bumper spot, a goalie's also going to be in the middle of his net when you're taking that shot. So you need to be accurate and have a quick release, where I'm not confident Suter has that shooting ability. Then the next question is, well, does Höglander have it? And he might. I think if you look at most of Höglander's goals this season, they've been in and around the blue paint. A lot of them have been greasy. So it doesn't necessarily indicate that he has that high-end shooting ability from, say, the high slot. So I'm not sure Höglander is the answer there either. But if Suter continues lacking production in that bumper spot, I wouldn't mind giving Höglander a shot there.
Yeah, I think maybe it's premature to say, yeah, it's got to happen today. I'm just thinking that eventually, Harmon, that power play is going to dry up again. And instead of panicking on April 14th and saying our power play has been stagnant for the past couple of weeks and we're about to head into playoffs, get to it now. Like, just do it now. Do it while it's hot. It feels like we know that that's going to be the solution. And I just think maybe getting in front of it might be the right idea. But again, maybe I'm a little too early on this. We'll see what happens. Just a thought I had with the way Nils Höglander's played and the way that all of his goals have come at even strength this season. Okay, I got to tell you about one of our sponsors, and that is Wendy's Daily Faceoff Survivor Pool. The only thing sweeter than the taste of victory is starting your day with the new Cinnabon Pull Apart from Wendy's. But there's no reason you can't have both, because Wendy's and Daily Faceoff Survivor are giving you a chance to win weekly prizes all season long. And hey, even if you made a few wrong picks like myself, at least you know heading to Wendy's right now for a $5 Cinnabon Pull Apart and small coffee is a great choice. Sign up for Daily Faceoff Survivor Pool Fantasy today, sponsored by Wendy's and the Wendy's app. I gotta make my picks today. I don't know what I'm gonna pick, but I'm running out of time to win another week. But I won one week. I got my free food. I call that a successful season, because there haven't been many of us, haven't been many people that won that game, but you've still got time to go try it out. So Daily Faceoff Survivor Pool Fantasy, if you're looking for it, go to dailyfaceoff.com. It's in the top right corner. You will find it right there. Okay, Harm, let's preview tonight's game as the LA Kings visit. This game's gonna be a boring one because the LA Kings are visiting. And again, I don't want to do it because it feels like we do it every show. We talk about the playoff picture. LA Kings have won 3 straight. So I don't know. Like, I don't know if it's going to be them. Vegas is kind of keeping up with them as well. Does Vegas catch LA? They're only 2 points behind them in the standings right now.
I don't know. Let me rephrase. The most interesting thing about LA right now, when I look at their last month, is they've beaten up on weaker opponents, but they haven't beat a lot of top teams. So you look back at some of their results over the last month. And so you mentioned, for example, they're on this 3-game winning streak. 2 of those wins were against Chicago and Minnesota, right? They beat Tampa over the weekend, but that was OT. And some of the other games, like, they lost 4-1 to Dallas. They lost 4-1 to Dallas the week before that. They lost to the Canucks last time these teams met. So you look at, for example, the month of March, the only team in a playoff spot that they've beaten is Tampa. And then you even go back towards the end of February, they lost to the Oilers. They lost to Nashville. Their only, again, victory in that sort of time span against a playoff team was when they first visited Rogers Arena against the Canucks in that 5-1 game. So LA is fascinating in that, again, they're picking up some wins recently, but a lot of it is against non-playoff opponents. And so coming off the off a successful week this past week, they need to prove that they can beat top opponents. And from their perspective, this is a litmus test game, I think.
Oh, I think it has to be. And I mean, it's going to be another trap game. We know that that's what the Kings are going to do. They're going to trap it up in the neutral zone, and we're going to try our best not to fall asleep. But aside from that, Harm, anything you're looking for tonight from the Canucks? I'm going to go first. I'm going to say I'm keeping my eye on the power play again. I keep harping on it. If the Canucks slip up on their details, yeah, I'm not happy about it. But as we've seen, like, they can turn it on. They can turn it on and they can get it done. Power play. I'm still watching the power play, and I'm watching it very closely to see if there's success, see if they're doing the right things. Because again, you brought it up earlier. When JT Miller assesses a game, he talks about, yeah, we created a lot of chances. A couple games ago, he was talking about how they could have scored 4 power play goals. And I think he was absolutely right, even though they only scored 1 goal. So I'm keeping an eye on the power play. I'm keeping an eye on the power play's continued success. Again, I brought up Nils Höglander earlier. I'm keeping an eye on it for that reason. But anything else about tonight's game?
Just overall 5-on-5 offensive generation, because the Canucks, especially that Pettersson line, created a lot of looks off the rush against Calgary. You're not going to get those same looks against LA, so how are you going to adapt? The last time the Canucks played LA on the road, they did that by starting to play quicker through the neutral zone, and it was one of two scenarios, right? They would try and send quick up passes in the neutral zone before LA could get established in their trap, or if LA was in its neutral zone forecheck 1-3-1 posture, the Canucks would then implement that set breakout where it would almost look like a power play breakout, where oftentimes with the JT Miller line on the ice, especially, they would slowly wait for their forwards to reload, loop back around, and then build speed underneath so that when they did gain the red line, chip it in. Now they've got a speed advantage that LA doesn't. So again, I always love watching that cat and mouse game. I'm going to be interested to see, can the Canucks build some speed on the forecheck? Because that was the big difference compared to the first time they played LA, was in that first game at Rogers Arena, they were forechecking in slow motion. It felt like their passing was completely out of sync. And if your passing is going to be out of sync as you transition the puck up the ice, then it's going to be impossible to break down LA's defensive structure. So that crispness, that pace with which they move pucks up the ice, I think is going to be interesting to see. And I think is going to have a direct impact on how much 5-on-5 offense they're able to create. That's what I'm really interested to watch.
Note the early start time, folks. 6 p.m. start tonight between the LA Kings and the Vancouver Canucks. Grady, can we pull up these practice lines from Sunday's practice? Jeff Patterson wrote about it over at... Or no, I wrote about it. I was about to say screw Jeff, but Jeff was there getting quotes and all the information, so not screw Jeff, but I wrote it. I wrote about the practice on Sunday. I forgot about that for a second. Anyways, these were the practice lines on Sunday. Nils Höglander and Connor Garland stay with Elias Pettersson. Phil DiGiuseppe moves up with JT Miller and Brock Besser as Pia Suter goes down to center the third line between Vasily Podkolzin and Neil Zaman. Fourth line of Ilya Mikheyev, Teddy Bluger, and Sam Lafferty. Harmon, the big note there is that no Elias Lindholm at practice. He was going to get evaluated. Rick Tocchet said he'd have more information today. We are recording this at 2:30 p.m. Rick Tocchet isn't set to meet with the media until 3:30 p.m. for his pregame media availability because the Canucks did not have a morning skate today. So we don't know if Elias Lindholm's going to be there, but we did hear the report on Saturday night, courtesy of Hockey Night in Canada's Elliot Friedman, who talked about Elias Lindholm and how the Canucks are trying to figure out what it is. A lot of different stuff being said about this injury right now. Lindholm missed the practice before the Flames game, and then he was there at the game, obviously. Seems to be skating fine, so you'd think it's something to do with upper body. Lindholm, of course, is a pending UFA that the Canucks traded for, so they are going to want him in the playoffs. And he started to come on recently. Like, he started to look a lot better as of late, so you're hoping that it's nothing too serious for Lindholm, and that he can avoid surgery and he can avoid being out too long, all of those sorts of things. We will see. We just don't know yet. We don't know the information on Lindholm just yet, but those were the lines at practice as Lindholm was absent. And Dakota Joshua skated for the first time in a non-contact jersey. So we still don't know when he's going to be back. They're evaluating it day to day, but certainly a good sign that Joshua is back. And then a huge shakeup on the defense pairing. Soucy Cole together, Nikita Zadorov and Philip Peronik together, and Hughes Myers as a pairing. We will see if the Canucks stick with those tonight. Ian Cole slots back in after two games scratched for load management reasons. Harmon, I just rattled off all that information and gave you no chance to react to any of it. So let's start with Elias Lindholm, his potential absence, and of course, his lingering issue that we've now heard about.
Yeah, I mean, if there's any doubt at all about his health and that he, and if he has been playing at less than 100%, play this cautiously. There's not a lot left to play for at this point in the season. Ultimately, even as we discuss Lindholm's overall disappointing impact since the trade, none of it matters if he shows up in the playoffs. And it doesn't even have to be that he lights it up in the first round is a point per game. That's not the expectation. Even if he is stout defensively, chips in with a key goal here or there that can sort of turn the momentum of a game, that's going to be enough to give this team a significant lift. And you need to make sure that you give him every opportunity to do that. I'm sure the Canucks and Lindholm will be cognizant of that factor too, that, hey, these games don't really mean a much until the playoffs start. So that's the biggest note there. And then as far as the bottom six lines, as they're currently constructed, it really does feel like now you have two bottom six lines that are pretty evenly sort of constructed. For example, you have Bluger, Mikheyev, and who was on the right wing with them again?
Lafferty.
So that's listed as their fourth line, but really I'd be surprised if they were deployed as a typical fourth line. I think they're going to play closer to third line minutes. And you're going to have the bottom six that's pretty even in terms of the ice time that they get. So that's my initial reaction to Lindholm's potential absence.
Yeah. So we'll see if that stands for the game. Anything you want to talk about on the defense pairings? Like anything? I mean, I'm glad Ian Cole's back in. Rick Tocchet spoke about that. I wrote about it a lot at Canucks Army about the load management and his relationship with Ian Cole and how Cole would take that sort of thing. And Cole's a pro. Like, that's kind of the vibe that Tocchet gave off, was that he understands it. Nobody wants to sit, but Tocchet also said the coaching staff's job is to make sure that they're putting out the best lineup and making all of their players play at their best. And they feel that this is the best way to get the best of Ian Cole. And it is very hard to disagree with that.
It's also an extra challenge playing the right side as a left shot defenseman, which I don't think we've brought that up enough in relation to like when Soucy's been healthy and Cole maybe not being at his best. Part of it is that he's also playing outside of his natural left side spot. So that's something to keep an eye on as he returns as well, since he's again going to be on the right side. Elsewhere, if they do stick with these shuffled D pairs, the biggest question anytime Hughes and Hronik are separated is, can Hronik drive his own pair? He had a good night against Calgary, I thought, on Saturday. That's always one thing to keep an eye on if they continue with the practice lines of having Hughes and Hronik separated.
Okay, let's get to our Light the Lamp contest brought to you by our friends at 4Winds Brewing. Vancouver is playing Los Angeles tonight. We want to know who's going to score the first goal for Vancouver. If you nail it, you could win a $25 gift card to the Four Winds Tap Room located at 72nd and River Road in Delta. Enter by following us on social media. Keep an eye out for today's show clip and comment who you think will light the lamp and score the first goal tonight. Winners will be contacted directly. Check us out at Canucks Army on Twitter, at CanucksArmy.com on Instagram, and Canucks Army on Facebook. And make sure you ask about Four Winds Light Lager at your local liquor store, or have some delivered to your front door through the online shop at fourwindsbrewing.ca. Harm, I'm sticking with it. Nils Höglander scores the first goal for the Vancouver Canucks tonight.
I like it. I'm going to go with Brock Besser. I want him to hit 40 this year. Not a lot of games left, so I'm calling him to score tonight.
Nils Höglander, you got to keep an eye out for him to score 25, right? Like, who would have thought Nils Höglander had 25 goals? We'll see. Karin in the chat said, since Harm has two lamps, should he also have to choose two players to light the lamp? It's something to think about. And thought-provoking comments like that are the ones we read in our next segment, which we like to call Anyone Else, presented by DoorDash. It's our listeners' chance to get involved and hit us up in the YouTube live chat, and it's also our listeners' chance to get 25% off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when they download the DoorDash app and enter code NATION25. That's all capital letters, NATION, and the numbers 25. Offer valid in Canada, subject to change. Terms do apply. With Double Dash on DoorDash, you can order from multiple restaurants or stores in the same delivery without additional delivery fees, so everyone can get what they want and need. Check them out. DoorDash is the app. Nation 25 is the promo code.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Okay, we've got a lot. And Harm, I've got some stuff right off the top here. I forgot to set it up, but over the weekend, I was helping clean up my childhood bedroom a little bit at my mom's house. And I found my old Roberto Luongo growth chart. Do you know what I'm talking about? Did you ever have one of these? Okay, so it's a full-scale poster, like a 6'5" poster of 6'3" Roberto Luongo, and it's like a growth chart, and I had it all throughout my childhood, and you can see little quads measured up against Luongo. I have it. It's right behind me. It's just not put up yet because I forgot to do it, but as I was looking at my bare wall, I was thinking, right there, right beside the Julio Rodriguez jersey, for those in the YouTube live show, I'm going to put the Luongo growth chart, because people were saying, you got to get something on that wall. It's going to be the Luongo growth chart. I'm going to put it right there, right behind the door. I think it's a great place for it, and I was so happy to find it, because I was cleaning up. I've lived by myself for about 3-4 years now, so I was like, okay, if I haven't needed this stuff over the past 4 years, I don't need it now. So mostly I was just throwing stuff out or giving it away, donating it. But I found this growth chart and it was rolled up and I was like, what is this? It's like some sort of poster at the back of my closet. It's rolled up and I looked at it and I saw what it was. And I just got so excited because I just got this thing for the, oh my gosh, I'm so excited for the, to put it up. It's going to look great. It's going to look great on the show. And I already got a text from my girlfriend who's watching the show. And she said, absolutely not. There is no way you are putting that up. But We'll see. I think it's going to go up. I think it's going to have to because it's such a good fit. Ty David's asking how tall I am. You know the answer to this. Most people know the answer to this because they listened to the show for a while. But I'm not going to say. What I'm going to do is I'll put it up for tomorrow's show, which is also remote because I'm going to Abbotsford to cover Jonathan Lekarimaki's first practice of the Abbotsford Canucks. Jeez, we haven't even talked about that yet. But I'll stand next to it. And then people can guess in the chat based on 6'3", Roberto Luongo. See how tall they think I am based on me standing next to the Roberto Luongo growth chart. But anyways, that's for tomorrow. And I need to make sure I said that right off the top.
Well, as a kid, did you make it barely halfway up?
I think so. I haven't looked at it, but I'm pretty sure. Yeah, like I was like 5'1" in grade 8, dude. Like I had a growth spurt. Dude. Like I had a big growth spurt from grade 8 to 9. And then I just kind of stopped growing from there. Like I hit my growth. Like I was like, well, again, I don't want to give away my height, but like I was like 5'1" in grade 7, grade 8, and then I had a growth spurt. And then maybe I grew a little bit more, but I just remember that summer was like, you know, the summer, you always see that the summer where kids just balloon, like they come to school the next year and they're like way, way taller. Anyways, I was a lot slower after that, but anyways, we're not going to get into that. let's talk about some stuff that's in the YouTube live chat. I really like this. There was a lot really good feedback. We had one actually from the Instagram live chat, which we rarely check, but Grady's on top of it. This one from KDog74. What does the third line look like when Dakota Joshua gets back? Do they go to the original line? That one being, of course, Teddy Bluger, Dakota Joshua, and Connor Garland. With the strong game that I saw from Connor Garland on Saturday night and the way he's played with this Pedersen line, I threw this out on Rinkwide with J-Pat after the game. It's hard to think that they would reunite that line. And 2 weeks ago, I would have found that unbelievable to say that they wouldn't go back to that third line as soon as Dakota Joshua was healthy. But I think right now, as it stands, and again, the line, things change in a week, 2 weeks, however long it is till Joshua gets back. But right now, if you're asking me, like if Joshua was good to go tonight, I don't split up the line.
Yeah, if Joshua was good to go tonight and we are going off Sunday's practice lines and Lindholm potentially not being available, you would slot him into that role where PDG is next to Miller and Besser, I think, because you don't want to break up that Pedersen line when it's been having success. But that's the hard part about having these conversations about, well, what does the lineup look like when this guy comes back at a certain point? Because it feels like it changes every two games based off what lines are hot, who has chemistry, who's losing chemistry, who do you need to get going? It feels like we could have had five different iterations of this debate over the last like 3 weeks, and we would have had completely different answers each time. And in the moment, each one of those five lineup iterations would have made sense based off what was happening at the time.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, we keep changing up and things are going to change. That's what I keep saying, is things are going to change. And that's why I don't like to project playoff opponents. That's why I don't like to project lines. But if you're asking me right now, yes, I'm not splitting up that line. I'm not reuniting that third line as it was constructed prior to Joshua's injury. Okay, this one. Yeah, Marcus Toth. Were you at the game on Saturday night, Harm?
I wasn't at the game.
Okay, well, Kuzmenko got a little video, not tribute, but he got a little shout out from Al Murdoch on the video board. I know that. When Montreal was in, did Tanner Pearson get one? Do you know the answer or no?
I was there. There was no video montage or anything. It was just a welcome back to Rogers Arena, Tanner Pearson, and then the camera panned to him on the ice.
Okay, so that's what it was for Kuzmenko too. So Marcus Toth asked this, did we do away with the welcome back tribute vids? Don't remember seeing one for Pearson last game and Kuzmenko. But I may have just not noticed. Marcus, I'd answer your question by saying, I think they're just saving the tribute videos for someone it's worth making a tribute video for, right? Like, I think what they're doing right now with the welcome back, Al Murdoch says, welcome back to this player. And then they pan to him on the ice. They did it for Travis Green. And, you know, Travis acknowledged the Rogers Arena crowd, of course. I think that's a very suitable way to do it. And I mean, we've had this conversation when players return, is what are they going to do? And I think what they're doing right now, I think it's suitable. Like, it's for Bo Horvat, for example, it was a tribute video, right? And you do a tribute video for Bo Horvat, but you don't do one for Kuzmenko. And I just don't think you do one for Pearson either.
Yeah. I always laughed though. Vegas had a full on. And again, I kind of get it because they won a Stanley Cup, even though Bluger didn't play in many games on the playoff run. But when Bluger was back in Vegas, I was obviously at the game, and they had a full-on video tribute for Bluger, and I thought that was really funny. And I was talking to Jesse Grage, who covers the Golden Knights, and he was saying, yeah, the only player that didn't get an extensive video tribute was Evgeny Dadonov.
Ah, yes. Yes. And obviously, we can imagine why that might be. Okay, here we go. Okay, this one, I have to bring it up. I didn't even remember to. I alluded to it. But Jonathan Lekkerimäki, officially assigned to the AHL's Abbotsford Canucks. General manager Patrick Alvin made the announcement late Monday morning. He's going to practice tomorrow. The Abbotsford Canucks are practicing tomorrow. I'm going to be there at Abbotsford Center, and I'm going to take it all in, and I'll be back to report on tomorrow's episode of Canucks Convo. Going to be a little bit of a tight schedule for me, tight day to try to fit everything in, but he is going to be with the Abbotsford Canucks, and this was from our old pal, Chris Faber, who wrote for Canucks.com. He wrote, in an effort to help Lekkerimäki's chances of representing his country, the Canucks decided it was best for him to practice and perhaps play with their AHL team instead of training by himself in Sweden. This short trial will also give the club an opportunity to get a better understanding of what Lekkerimäki needs to continue his development. Yeah, that's not a good line, Chris. I should still be editing his work. Anyways, the thing there is obviously that he's going to be practicing and might get into a game. We'll see. We don't know if he's going to end up in a game, but going to be fun tomorrow to see him anyways in the Abbotsford practice uniform. And then Friday, Saturday, Abbotsford is in Colorado. So unfortunately, Canucks fans, unless you want to travel to Colorado, won't get a chance to see Jonathan Lekkerimäki if he makes his debut. But of course, we will have the coverage of that game if he makes his debut. And regardless, if he doesn't make his debut, we'll have the coverage of it as well over at CanucksArmy.com in the form of the Farmies. Anything you want to say about Lekkerimäki?
Yeah, I'm just curious to see if he gets into a game or not. Based off talent, he's obviously more than good enough to be able to draw into the lineup. It's just a case of he just finished his season in the SHL. How much do you want to put on his plate? He's also gearing up to get ready, obviously, to try and make Sweden for world championships. So there's a lot of workload there. There's obviously travel logistics because Abbotsford is on the road right now. I think that's going to be the biggest variable in determining whether or not he gets in. Plus just how long is he going to officially be in North America in general before he heads back? I think there's uncertainties there. And that's just what I'm really curious to see, because if he does make his debut for Abbotsford, that's going to be really exciting to see. How does this game look on North American ice at the AHL level?
Yeah, that's going to be what we're watching. I even think you can pick stuff up from practice, right? Like, you can see stuff at development camps, you can see stuff at practice, different things, but it'll be interesting tomorrow. Hopefully we have we'll have some audio tomorrow, because like I said, I will be at the practice, so I will talk to Jonathan Lekkerimäki, and we will hear from him tomorrow as well. But yes, he is here. We'll see how long he's here for, and of course we will see if he gets into a game. Okay, there was one other thing I wanted to bring up, and no, it was not Shohei Ohtani. Actually, I think that might have been it for me on anyone else. There's a lot of listener feedback, but I wanted to make sure I got those two things in, the Lekkerimäki and the thing I brought up earlier as well. Let's get to some listener questions now. This one from Gnar. He talked about it that if Garland was 6'3", he would be Todd Bertuzzi. Assuming Garland spends his summer on a medieval stretching rack and reports to camp at 6'3", who are his new player comparables? I think you answered it yourself, Gnar. Todd Bertuzzi is one of them. Tage Thompson is certainly another one, but you can say that about every
really? Tage, I don't think so.
Well, he's got the hand.
Tage Thompson has a bomb of a shot. Thompson's shot is his biggest weapon. Garland's shot is probably one of the weakest parts of his offensive game.
But if Garland grew in size, he would have the shot, you'd assume.
Maybe, maybe not.
Like, I guess we have to agree to disagree on the interpretation.
You're not stylistically, like, Thompson is a trigger man. Like, he's not a guy that is shifty in the corners and sets other guys up. Thompson is on the receiving end of, in fact, they'd have good chemistry together because Garland would be the one setting Thompson up in the slot for these shooting opportunities.
Okay, people are talking about how they grew and when they grew. We got some interesting ones in the chat here. But back to this question, who's his player comparables then? 6'3", Connor Garland. Give me a player comp then.
That's a good question. I don't have one off the top of my head. You'd, you'd have to give me, like, I'm trying to think of, like, how many 6'3 forwards are there that are that shifty and darty down low, sound playmakers? Putting me on the spot without having a chance to look up names, I don't have one off the top of my head.
The only show in the market where we would get this question and Harmon would say, that's a good question, and then we'd have to do prep as well to try to figure it out. I'm trying to figure it out as well. There's just not many guys that are that size and also that shift. It doesn't happen. It doesn't happen, and maybe that's why, is when you get that high up in the air, I don't know. Maybe we'll ask Irv. We'll ask Irv on Gofar what it's like.
Well, it does make it, like, part of it's almost an asset having that low center of gravity. And Garland's told me before that he took figure skating growing up, so that's an advantage he was able to draw. And when you're a smaller guy, you have to find those advantages, because if he grew to 6'3, I don't think he'd be as agile. I don't think he'd be quite as mobile on his edges, which would change his game. Obviously, it would help him in other ways. He'd be a menace in front of the net, but I don't have a great comp off the top of my head.
Okay, this is an interesting question, Harm. Jesse C asked this one, a little inside baseball Jesse's asking for. Is there any difference in media availability for the playoffs? What potentially changes in your guys' routines, processes to cover the team? Anything that you're excited for? I think the answer is we don't really know, because the last time they made the playoffs, they were in the bubble, and the time before that, Harmon and I were 15 years old. So we don't know. Like, we don't know what it's going to be like, but obviously we're going to have top-notch coverage. We're going to be doing our live shows, all that sort of stuff. I don't think much will change from us other than the fact that this whole city is going to be on board. Car flags are going to be coming out. It's going to be a good time. The buses are going to say, "Go Canucks, go," I hope. That's one thing I remember, is whenever the Canucks make the playoffs, TransLink, the buses say, "Go Canucks, go."
Yeah, I love that. Likewise, I have no idea. I think by the time you reach a certain round, I think it may be the conference finals, it switches from going into locker rooms to podium style, just because there are so many, there's so much media, especially that typically isn't there over the course of a regular season. So instead of swarming the locker room, they pull players aside and have them doing interviews in a press conference style. So that's one change. Other than that, I mean, I think that I'm going to be on the road with Drancer, so that'll be fun to see playoff hockey on the road as well and cover it. I'm super excited for it.
Oh, it's going to be great. And again, this city is going to grasp on. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be a lot of fun. Here's a good one. Sino Chick, who does Harm want to see as the first round opponent as a traveling media member?
Well, like, is this question based off what opponent I want them to play, or like just what city?
You have to take it all into account. Like, you can say that, okay, Nashville's hot right now, but I'd love to visit Nashville, the city. But you could also say, okay, I don't want to see them play LA because it's going to be boring as hell, but I also really want to go to Los Angeles. So you need to do the math in your head and weigh it all.
I think LA would be a nice middle ground, because first off, it's not Vegas. I don't want to play Vegas in the first round. And second, compared to Nashville, it's a much shorter flight. Nashville, there's no direct, so it's a whole day of travel. Whereas LA, it's close, it's direct. It also, I mean, I guess it doesn't really affect Vancouver's travel too much because they got the charter. But it still is a bit closer for the team as well. I think LA would be a nice blend between, like, this is the one consensus I think I've come to, and just in having conversations with some friends over the weekend, the main takeaway is I don't think Canucks fans have settled on who their ideal playoff opponent is, but the one answer that keeps coming up is just don't be Vegas. I don't know if it's been the same for you, or if people in our live chat agree, but it really just, that's the feedback I keep getting, is just not Vegas.
Yeah, a lot of people don't want Vegas. And I mean, look, they're the defending cup champs, right? So there's going to be some recency bias there. And also, like, we have to assume that Tomas Hertl and Mark Stone are going to be activated for game one of the playoffs, right? So I think that plays into it as well, that this team is going to be so much stronger in game one of the playoffs than they are right now. So I think that does certainly play into it. Harm, I'll throw a travel schedule at you. Second round, they play Edmonton. Third round, they play Winnipeg in the Western Conference Final.
I don't care. I'm covering playoff hockey. I'm not going to complain about what city I'm in.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And hey, if it was in Edmonton, I'd for sure go, because as we know, that's where the Nation Network head offices are. And that's where I'd like to stay. I like going to Edmonton.
I kind of want Edmonton, because I think that'd be such a fun second round series. Plus, it's a rink and city we're familiar with. We've been to that rink and covered games there a million times, which makes it easier when you're already trying to grapple with the insane rush of playoff hockey and hitting deadlines and all that type of stuff.
The West Edmonton Mall Harveys. We've been.
No,
there.
I'm not looking forward to that.
What? I said this a long time ago, but 2 years ago, you and I were the only media at the. Well, usually we are the only media at the Edmonton games. We're usually the only two people there traveling. But we went to the West Edmonton Mall Harveys and it was delicious. And I wish there was a Harveys in BC. But anyways, I'll digress.
It wasn't bad, but West Edmonton Mall is still so far from the actual downtown core. That's the annoying part.
It's so weird that it's so far, but it is. And you're right. Yeah, it is really weird. And also, everybody in Edmonton hates that mall. Like, they all hate the mall. So anyways, let's move on here. People are asking where the Ohtani presser is. I'm not going to do it. We're not going to talk about the presser because it hasn't happened yet. So I can't talk about it. I did check. I did a little check on the phone there. But no, it hasn't happened yet. Okay, is there anything else? I think we've covered everything. And I think that's it for listener questions. Oh, here we go. We'll close on this one, Harm. I'll ask you. RP88, do you think Elias Pettersson will beat his previous career high in points, his points record? Do you think he will surpass that? And the number, of course, is 102 set last season. Do you think he'll surpass it?
I don't. I think he'd have to go on quite a heater. He's at 84 right now. 84 points right now. Previous career high is 102. He could if he goes on a heater, but I don't know. What do you think?
I'm going pure vibes and saying, yeah, he does it. 9 games to go. How many points does he need? I can't do math.
He needs to pass it. 18. He needs 19.
19. To pass. Okay, 19 to pass, and he's got 9 games. Oh, that is steep.
No,
I don't
not
know
9 games. He's got 11 games left.
Oh, 11 games. Why am I so
it's
bad at
doable,
math?
It's doable, but okay. He needs to really go on a heater.
Yeah, he does. And I mean, you'd assume that he would basically have to go without back-to-back games without any points. Like, if that happens,
yeah,
it's basically over. I think he could do it, but if I were Ohtani-ing it, I would say no.
Ohtani-ing it? I love that.
If you're giving me odds, I'm going to say no, he does not.
But this is a legal discussion, Quads.
Yes,
it's not Ohtani-ing it. This is legal.
Yeah. Okay, we do have some news from the presser. Ohtani, I never bet on baseball or any other sports or never asked anyone to do it on my behalf. Big shocker there. There's the news from Shohei Ohtani's presser. He says that himself. So we will see what comes of all this. But anyways, of course, we won't talk about it too much because there is playoff hockey coming to this city, and it is going to be a lot of fun. For my co-host, Harmon Dial, and our technical producer, Grady Sass, my name is Dave Gugelli. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of the Canucks Conversation.
Canucks Conversation with Harmon and Quads, brought to you by the Toyota BZ4X. The BZ4X's fresh look is just an added bonus to its range, since you can drive up to 406 kilometers on a single charge. That's enough to get you from Kitsilano to Whistler or Kamloops to Kelowna and back and still be home in time for the game. Now that's what we'd call electric. The best part, by choosing electric, you can get up to $11,000 in rebates and incentives. The BZ4X are in stock and selling quickly, so make sure to visit shoptoyota.ca or your local Pacific Toyota dealer to get your hands on one. Canucks Conversation is live Monday through Friday, every weekday at 2 p.m. over on the Canucks Army YouTube channel. Make sure you like, subscribe, and interact in the YouTube live chat every day with us, folks.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen,
premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.